this would have more damage on the psyche than a visit to Gunther von Hagen's Body Worlds exhibition, that's for sure. Hello, Michelle.
Georgie. Hello.
Oh, my God. How's Trix?
Oh, Trix are great. Trix are up. Trix are down.
Trix are up and down.
Trix are up and down.
You've been turning the Trix?
I'm always turning a trick or two. That's our role here. No, all good. All good. Nothing to report, really, more than it's been snowing like a bitch. There's your weather report.
Oh, wow. Oh, there's your weather report. What about the health report? We've got health to report.
I am not doing that.
No, don't do that. No one cares.
Unless I've had a foot severed, a la Melissa Caddick, I'm not talking about health. It's too boring.
It's really dull.
It's what old people talk about. Oh, my back. Oh, my aches and pains.
That's what I thought they did talk about. I thought when you get to a certain age, so over 60 basically, that's when you start to talk about your ops. Because I remember sitting, being privy to conversations of my nana with her sisters. There's like multiple nanas. They're all the same, my nana and her sisters. And they'd all get together and say, oh, yes, I had my eye op and that's what happened. And then they'll say, oh, but I had my foot op. Oh, I've had my gastric op. And it's all about the ops. And I didn't know what an op was for ages. I'm a little girl sitting in there amongst these older women drinking whiskey and milk and talking about ops.
Well, speaking of ops, Jen had an eye op.
Is she okay?
Oh, she's absolutely fine. She can see fantastic now. But
great.
She thought she had a cream-colored cat. She doesn't. It's a white cat. She was like, what the fuck? I've got a white cat.
Feel like we've had this conversation before where she suddenly looked and realized that she doesn't have a cat at all, but it's a small possum or something. No?
It's a travel pussy.
She got confused.
Got a white travel pussy.
Oh, well, that's good. I'm glad that Jen can now see her pussy clearly. How about we introduce ourselves, Michelle? Because I'd like to say that you're Michelle.
And you are Geordie. And you're all listening to Eavesdropping the
Codpast.
The podcast. The Codpast.
And we congratulate you for that. Well done for sticking it out even this far into this particular episode because so far, so batty.
I was laughing the other day when I listened back to one of the episodes and you were saying, they called me a nana. I haven't heard that term for a long time.
It's one of those expressions that you can get away with these days. Other expressions can be troublesome. So I like to stick with just a piece of fruit or vegetables as a description for myself or others. And that way you can't get hauled over the coals or cancelled.
So, oh, your mango. Doesn't quite work.
You can't say kiwi. That's going to be some sort of...
Oh, come on.
I don't know. I'm making shit up here. Listen, Michelle, I just want to say, though, speaking of words and getting words right and things, you were really hung up on the fact that alcoholism is described as a disease.
Mm.
And I know that it's not because you were doubting that it might be a disease. It's just you didn't like the use of the word. Well, I just wanted to let you know, and all our listeners who may be agreeing with you, that the American Medical Association has classified alcoholism as a disease since 1956. So it's not a new thing. And alcohol and drug addiction, also known as substance use disorder. So maybe disease, disorder, it depends. They may be interchangeable in this way. I know what you mean about a disease being something that you catch, but it's not always. I think there are some diseases which are just present. You don't have to catch it like a virus, because that's a virus, what you catch.
Because I also looked into this afterwards. There have been calls to stop labeling it a disease for reasons of people saying that it's... I actually put a link to this in the Patreon.
Did you?
I did. There is a debate about cancelling calling it a disease, actually, because it does a disservice to people. You know, we do talk a lot about language. I got hauled over the coals for saying committed suicide. That's no longer...
Hauled over the coals? No, I just told you that it's not used anymore.
Okay.
I didn't haul you over the coals, Michelle.
No, that's true. You didn't.
I just educated you.
Yes.
But I had to be educated as well because I'm working in mental health. So I was told this through the mental health people.
Language changes. I think this term disease, there is a lot of debate about changing that language too.
Well, so. It has been around since 1956, so maybe it is time to look at it again. I don't know. But I would say to anyone who questions these things is I hold back my judgment and I wait because often it's the people who are affected by those word choices. It doesn't affect me personally. but it might do somebody else. And I think that's really important to remember when you start getting up in arms about, oh, you know, why have they changed that? Because I have heard that, you know, when terminology changes, what was wrong with the old way? Mm. Well, maybe there is something wrong with it for some other people, just because it doesn't affect you. I'm not saying you, Michelle, but, you know, people in general have to just be a bit more open-minded.
All right.
No, I'm not saying you. I'm just saying, you know, about the language changes. Actually, I'm talking about gender here.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And other things that have changed.
That's tricky. That is a can of worms.
But this is why I use the term Nana instead of anything else, because you can't go wrong, you Nana.
Gotcha.
Have you been doing anything interesting recently, Michelle?
Well, I've been reading.
Have you?
Reading some correspondence from our beautiful eavesdroppers who have been getting in touch.
God, we love those people. God, I love them.
They are wonderful. We've got such fantastic listeners. So we've been sent a picture.
Oh.
From none other than one of our super listeners.
Super duper.
Super duper. Kiss Apocalypse. He sent a wonderful picture of himself in a magnificent silk robe.
Oh, because we talked about his robe, didn't we?
We did. I've put eyes on the robe. It's quite spectacular. There was some marital strife in the taking of the picture of him in the robe.
Oh, dear.
But it's all good. We have not caused a marriage breakup. Thank you very much for the picture. We've also had some very kind words from our gorgeous White Witch.
Oh, Safika. Yes. Mm-hmm. I've just had a television recommendation from her, which I'll talk about in a minute. What does Safika say?
Well, she thanked you for doing a very nice job on The Most Beautiful Boy.
Because it was her story. She sent it in. So listeners, send those stories in, because we do pay attention and it really helps when we're having a hard time knowing what to do next week.
It is a double shout out to Safika, because I've actually got something that she flagged coming up.
Busy, busy girl.
A bit later. I know, she's full of the good ideas.
When is she going to get her first check?
When we get one. Yeah, she's full of the great ideas. Yeah. Thank you, Safika, for that. She also said she's a big fan of the John Hughes movies, even
still?
Today. Oh. Still. Yes, she loves it. I think there are some that are definitely worth revisiting. But
like what?
Well, I haven't revisited them, so I would love to just go back and see if they hold up. I know you said Breakfast Club didn't hold up.
No, it did not.
Did not hold up. You know, each to their own. I think when you watch them, if you've had a place in your heart for those 80s films, maybe you watch them with a lens of nostalgia. I don't know.
You know, I talked a lot about The Outsiders last episode. I am desperate to see it again because I watched it all the time.
I hope it holds
up. It's in black and white. Remember, it was in black and white as well.
It's what?
It was filmed in black and white.
Okay.
The Outsiders. Do you remember?
No, I don't remember.
Did you watch it?
Yeah, I'm sure I have, but it was a long time ago.
Did you read it?
That I've revisited. Yes, it was one of those books as a young teen, but I don't remember anything really too much about it more than Pony Boy.
Bloody Matt Dillon, he's so gorgeous, but he was a bit of a monster in that film. But he's still gorgeous today. I saw him recently. Not in the supermarket or anything. No, yeah. I wish it was.
Hi, Matt.
Hi, Matt. I saw him on TV. What was he doing? I can't remember. There's been a bit of television watching in my house at the moment. Exciting news, Michelle. Maths Australia is back on.
Oh, fucking hell. I cannot even watch one episode because if I do, I am reeled in.
Yeah. Well, here in the UK, we're a little bit behind the Australians. I think they are much further along than we are. It's just started last week, so they do 4 episodes a week. My husband and I, because normally he's scoffing at me, but he got on that sofa and he didn't move. He's like, let's do one more. Let's do one more. So we've done the first 4. We've got some favourites out of the ones we've seen so far. There is a magnificent older bride who is from Byron Bay, and she speaks like that. She's a creatrix, and her name is
Lucinda. What the fuck is a creatrix?
You know, she's earthy, she's spiritual, she's very in touch, she's very grounded. And she's got this guy who is so not grounded in any way. There's a lot of tragedy, a lot of tears as well.
These so-called experts, they do not match them for love. They match them for good telly. Come on,
maybe sometimes they do that, yeah.
Yeah, of course. It's bullshit. It's a TV show. It's entertainment. And these people are guinea pigs.
I think, Michelle, for entertainment purposes, this series of Maths Australia is going to be absolutely out of control because it showed you the clips of what's to be expected. It's out there. It's madness.
I've got to watch, but I'm terrified of watching because I know it's hours of my life.
Yes, that's true, unfortunately.
And I do know that when I come and visit you shortly, we'll both be on the sofa with a cocktail watching that.
You better catch up.
I dip in and out. It doesn't take long to get right in there. That's the problem with Maths. They've got a ring-a-ding-ding great formula that just reels you right in.
Other television that we watched, though, and I did mention that recently, was True Detective Night Country with Jodie Foster. Have you seen that?
So I started watching that upon your recommendation with my partner because I thought, here we go. We've got ice, we've got snow, we've got Arctic conditions, very similar to Sweden in the winter, where I've been to Sweden in the summer where it has been 24-hour daylight. And I can imagine it's the opposite in the heart of Night Country.
Yes.
He hated it.
Why?
Won't watch it. Because he said, there's some supernatural shit in this and I don't want to watch it. And I said, I don't think
he's wrong.
Okay. I think he wasn't into all the folkloric stuff.
I won't say that because I don't want to give it away. Well, just not to give it away, Michelle, I think you need to hold your judgment when you're watching this program. Mm-hmm. It's no Jordskott, which was that Swedish one I talked about a couple of weeks ago, where you thought you were watching a Swedish crime drama and it ended up being all about spirits and fairies and changelings and rocks that turn into people. Yes.
Yeah, okay. No, he hates that shit.
Well, it's not like that. I mean, you watch it on your own without him. It's really bloody good and I loved every minute of it. And it made me think about a few things as well.
Well, I liked that Jodie Foster still looks like Jodie Foster.
Yeah, me too.
She's aged, she's got wrinkles, she's got her life on her face, and she looks absolutely fantastic for it.
She
does. And she's sexy as all fucking get out. She's rooting dudes on that show. She's getting
rooting
in
away.
She's rooting and tooting.
I tell you what, rooting, what's his name? Christopher Eccleston, who does not stand the test of time. He looked good looking for so long and now he's gone down the drain, bless
him.
Not down the drain, but he's just a bit older now, isn't he? He doesn't look as good. He's looking a bit ropey. He's her boss.
The one where she goes over and knocks on the door and she's like,
rooting
and tooting.
You don't have to tell what happens.
Do you know what? I was thinking when she was getting nailed on top of the washing machine or whatever, she's got good legs. For a woman in your 60s, you got some legs going
on
there.
Is she in her 60s?
She's got to be. Come on.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's interesting. 60s. Go Jodie. God, she's had a long and varied career, hasn't she? I'd like to look into her in a future episode.
I would love that too because there's some really intense stuff. Hotel New Hampshire. Wow. That stayed with me.
I've never seen it.
Oh my goodness, that's a wreck for you then this weekend. It's
okay.
It's really devastating not to be watched with the children.
Well, going back to True Detective Night Country, on that theme, my story today is something to do with some of the themes that if you have watched True Detective Night Country, you will recognize. I'm going to tell you a story right now, Michelle.
Just very quickly interjecting, she's 62?
Oh, okay. Yeah. That makes sense. Mm. Gorgeous. On New Year's Eve morning in Minnesota in 1980, Wally Nelson discovered the body of his friend lying in the snow just a few meters from his door. And it was 19-year-old Jean Hilliard. And she had been driving home the night before from a night out when her car had stalled. And she was only wearing like a winter coat, mittens, cowboy boots. Mm. And it was minus 30 degrees Celsius outside. So when the car stalled, she made the choice to get out of the car in, you know, this outfit she was wearing and walk towards Wally's house, which she knew was not too far away.
Yep.
But as she started to walk, she realized his house was a lot further away than she'd anticipated.
Oh, shit. Okay. Hypothermia.
At some point, she tripped and fell over, must have passed out. And for 6 hours, Jean Hilliard's body lay out in the freezing temperatures until she was quite simply frozen solid. When Wally woke up the next morning and he stumbled across her and he realized who it was and what was going on, he grabbed her by the collar, dragged her onto his porch, and Wally was reported as saying, "I thought she was dead, froze stiffer than a board, but I saw a few bubbles coming out of her nose." And the truth is, if it wasn't for Wally's actions, Jean Hilliard might have died
I can't believe she's not fucking dead, to be honest.
Well, medical experts in cold countries say this: nobody is dead until warm and dead.
Oh, okay.
Which is interesting when you think about it, right? So she's frozen absolutely solid. Mm-hmm. In some cases, a chilled body can slow the dying process down for long enough to sustain life with a low pulse for a little while. Her body temperature was barely 27 degrees Celsius, and that's 10 degrees below that of a healthy human.
Okay.
Right now I'm thinking about that scene in, did you watch the bit in Night Country, True Detective, where they found the scientists?
Yeah, fucking terrifying.
Her face was ashen, her eyes were solid.
Oh.
And her skin, I thought that might get you. Oh. And her skin was so hard that they couldn't even puncture it with hypodermic needles.
Oh my God.
Her temperature was too cold to even register on a thermometer, and her 12 beats per minute pulse barely registered.
Yeah, of course.
Her body was so stiff, the medics didn't even need to use a gurney. They just carried her. One had her feet, the other had her shoulders, into the hospital.
Yeah, but don't you feel like she might just snap? You know, like a little...
Yes. Well, I was worried about that when I read that. The doctor who treated her said the body was cold, completely solid, just like a piece of meat out of a deep freeze. But, Michelle, within a few hours and warmed by heating pads, her body thawed and by noon she was talking.
What the fuck?
I know. So apart from a couple of numb blistered toes, she was in good enough health to be discharged.
Well, this reminds me of a really horrific story that I just had read about recently. And trigger warning, because this is really fucking grim. So there is a YouTuber in Russia and he does pranks. He and his wife have this YouTube channel and he decided he wanted to do his own channel. You write in on like chat and you say, I'll give you $100 if you do X, Y, Z.
Oh yes. That happened in Maths UK, didn't it? One of the...
Oh really?
The guy's got in trouble with his wife because he used to do squats because people would sign up to his YouTube channel and say, do 100 squats. And she hated it.
Well, similar thing. It's kind of like, do this and I'll give you, you know, $100 or whatever.
Uh-huh. So, oh God, public humiliation for money. Sounds interesting.
So we're in the deepest, darkest depths of middle of winter Russia. The girlfriend, who is, I believe, pregnant, someone wrote in and said, put her outside. Now, she's in tiny little shorts and a little, like, you know, vest.
Vest.
And so he puts her outside. And they're like, leave her out there for another 10 minutes. $100. $100. She's there bashing on the door and he doesn't let her in. Then,
oh, my God.
It goes quiet and he goes out. She is dead.
Oh, fuck.
He brings her in, puts her on the sofa, goes back to his YouTube channel and keeps getting more money. Has no fucking sympathy. She's just lying there dead. And it's all on YouTube.
Being filmed.
It's all being filmed.
Oh my God.
Absolutely fucking horrific. I really thought that's where your story was going. And this guy, I think he only got like a year in jail or something.
Only a year.
It's horrific. Do you know what? I will link this up in the show notes because it is a absolutely horrible story of...
That is horrible.
Just death because of views and people saying, yeah, put her outside. And he doesn't even give a fuck. He literally just walks over her. Like, he puts her on the floor.
Oh my
He's walking
God.
Over her to get back to his computer. No sympathy.
She's pregnant.
Can you imagine being the mother of this woman?
Oh my God.
The that's family so awful. Of this woman and seeing how the boyfriend treats her.
Well, that's shocking.
Back to your story.
Well, my story is also shocking, Michelle, because I'm going to talk about three men who weren't as lucky as Jean Hilliard. And similar to your story you just told, it was 37-year-old David Harrington and his pals, Ricky Johnson, who's 38, and Clayton McGeaney, 36. Now, this story was sent in to me by full-time hot guy, part-time researcher, Al Taggart, has sent this in. And it's a story of these three men who, on the evening of January the 9th, this year, 2024, Clayton McGeaney, who's the 36-year-old out of the three of them, 36, 37, 38, the guy's ages are, Clayton McGeaney, his fiance, along with several of the other men's friends and family members, had been searching for them for 2 days. She finally found a body on the back porch of a man who was a mutual friend of theirs, and she called the police. It was the home of the guy's friend, Jordan Willis. And these three men, plus one other, had been around there two nights before they were found, watching the Kansas City versus LA Chargers NFL game at his house.
So this is in America somewhere?
In Kansas. Once the police arrived, the other two men were then discovered in the backyard. And Jordan Willis, whose house it was, said he had no knowledge that his friends were freezing to death on his property. Family members and friends, though, were appalled. And some posted online such things as, "This man was inside his home alive while my friends were dead in his yard for Lord knows how long." And some people, Michelle, believed that he knew his friends were missing and that he had read messages from people looking for them. Not only that, but several people had been around there banging on his door for up to 20 minutes at a time in the search for these guys, because a lot of people knew where the men were that night. But then they never came home.
This is just weird. Is there a mystery to this?
It is a mystery. It was McGeaney's fiance, like I said, who finally, when she went round there, she had been knocking on the door for ages and ages. And eventually she went round again and she smashed the window, yelled for Jordan Willis for about 10 minutes. And then when she found the body, the police came. And that's when he made his appearance, sauntered out of his room in his boxers. I think it's just in his boxers, no robe. Mm. And a wine glass in hand, according to social media users and some reports.
Right.
He now has a lawyer, obviously, John Piserno, who said that his client had no idea his friends were dead until police knocked on his door. This is 2 days later. He said that his client was asleep with headphones on next to a loud fan when people came looking. And he didn't see the messages until, obviously, one of the wives and the police had contacted him. Why has he got a fan on?
Yeah, in the middle of winter. And also, what went on for those guys to be out the back of the house?
Let me tell you what I know. It's not much, but I know some stuff because it's gone quiet. So the fact that his friend's cars were still out the front of his property didn't seem unusual to Jordan Willis, apparently. Because they would often do that, leave their cars there overnight. It sounds like, you know, they had a lot of drinks, a lot of fun.
Yeah.
In recent news, after the initial finding of these three men, the next bunch of explosive headlines were that friends had come forward to describe Willis as a chemist and that he was known for making drug cocktails. One of the victim's cousins believes that the so-called chemist may have fucked up and made a mistake. So this guy, Jordan Willis, he works as an HIV scientist, and he told police that he slept for 2 days without any idea that the men were frozen dead in his backyard. And apparently he has been known, like I said before, for handing out crazy drugs even before he became a professional scientist. So that's what he works as now, like I said, HIV scientist. In his high school days, though, he was known to tailor make drug cocktails for people in certain situations. So I'm imagining if you are wanting to enhance your sports performance or finish an essay or maybe just more recreational highs, he would go about putting the drugs together and you'd go to him for all your drug needs. This is all hearsay from community members, by the way.
Yeah.
Some people think the three men may have been used as guinea pigs for a drug cocktail that had gone wrong. However, the police have now concluded that the deaths were not homicide. The Kansas City Police Department said that there were no obvious signs of foul play observed at or near the crime scene. But this has angered all of the men's friends and families. There is one of them, Ricky Johnson, his brother, Jonathan Price. He told the media that Jordan's story does not add up whatsoever. And David Harrington's father, John, said to Willis, Jordan Willis, "There were four of you in the house and now three of them are dead and you're not. That doesn't add up."
I mean, there is a question mark over what the fuck really happened. Why were they outside? Why were they not coming inside? What went wrong? What went wrong?
Well, I guess you can only theorize, can't you? But the police have discovered that, I think by February the 1st, toxicology reports showed traces of substances found in the three men's bodies, but they're not saying what they were. But what we do know is that Johnson, Harrington and McGeaney were all very close friends and would often post photos of themselves together on social media, especially like right up to before their deaths. However, friends and family never saw Jordan Willis in any of these photos. So they weren't particularly close with him, although they were around there watching the football that night. So they all went to high school together, the three men, but Willis went to a different nearby high school. And it's said that on this night of January 7th, the three friends went to Jordan Willis's rented house in Kansas City to watch this game. And even though they only talk about the three guys and Jordan Willis, there is a fifth man.
Oh.
He had left earlier in the evening, and unfortunately he can't really shed any more light on it. Willis's attorney, John Pisano, claimed that his client, Jordan Willis, last saw the men when they left his house and he went to bed. And this is what the attorney says. He says, Willis had no knowledge that they remained in his backyard, but then he did an about face and changed his story and said that Willis went to sleep before the three men left.
What?
Yeah. So it's very confusing. He said in different media interviews that the evidence suggested that they all died of hypothermia.
Okay.
Which maybe is the case, but there was, like I said, toxicology reports have proven there are things in their systems.
Well, because with hypothermia, and this was actually talked about a little bit in the article I wrote about this fucking asshole YouTuber who killed his girlfriend. I think when hypothermia starts to kick in, the brain is not functioning properly. Your thought processes are not
exactly
going in the correct way. So you either don't realize that you're cold and you need to get the fuck into some warmth or whatever it is. So you're not acting rationally and you're not behaving in the...
It's true. But like I said, we can only theorize about what was going on for these three men and why they were outside.
Yeah.
Now, all these reports also that I read are quite confusing because in one report, and I've just said, Willis said that he slept for 2 days, but apparently other reports say that he worked from home for the next day and didn't see texts or notice the bodies.
Bullshit.
So I don't know what's being made up, what's the truth. And when John Pisano, his attorney, tried to explain why Willis didn't respond to the messages of all these people searching for 2 days, he said that two people came to his house. However, my client did not hear from them as he sleeps with earbuds and a loud fan. One of those people was the wife of one of the deceased. She tried to reach him via Facebook Messenger. Unfortunately, he did not see the message until after the police contacted him.
Right.
So it's just really unfortunate. If that's the truth, it's just so unfortunate. It just looks like he's so careless.
Yeah.
A bit like your YouTuber. And loved ones feel that Jordan's behavior when Nagini's fiance and the police then arrived was all bunged on. They think that he was a bit too kind of like, what?
Right.
How could he not realize? People don't understand how he couldn't realize that there were two frozen bodies in his back garden and one on his back porch for 2 days. It must have been a wild night.
Well, the one on the porch is maybe the guy realizing like, fuck, I need to get in, you know.
Could be. Neighbors told Fox News that they saw two of the men bringing in 2 30 packs of beer to the party, and the fifth man that was there that night reportedly texted other friends about drug use at Willis's home during the game. Authorities have not confirmed whether Nagini, Harrington and Johnson had keys on them or whether they were attempting to get inside their cars.
From the backyard? I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean,
I don't know what the layout is, so I can't tell you. Did they leave out the back door? Were they heading home? Or was it a case of, guys, you've got to get out of here? Or did they go outside and accidentally lock themselves out?
Yeah.
Maybe they went outside to smoke. It doesn't sound like they would go outside to smoke because it sounds like it was a pretty wild night inside. But Willis's attorney, again, Mr. Pisano, he addressed the fifth friend that was there that night. Yep. The man's name is not often mentioned, and Pisano said that this guy had arrived at Jordan Willis's place before Nagini, Harrington and Johnson and left around midnight.
Oh.
And the four men were alive and watching Jeopardy when he left. So they'd watched the game. The next program was on and he went home and they were all happily sitting there watching the TV together.
Right.
Latest news on Willis, however, was that he has since checked into rehab for substance abuse. And will not be facing any charges for the deaths of these three men, as far as I can see.
I mean, on the surface of it, what are they going to charge him with? Yes, he's a fuck up who didn't realize his friends were out there, but that's not a crime.
No, exactly. And these men, if the toxicology reports have shown that they've got this stuff in their system.
Yeah, but traces.
Yeah, but who can say that they didn't take those things of their own volition? It was their own choice. Yeah.
Of course.
I have the final word, which kind of harks back to what you were just saying about hypothermia, from Quora.
Aye.
The font of all knowledge. It's a man called Nick Puglio, a funeral director, who took to Quora to say, alcohol has a way of telling your body you are hot or warm when it's actually hypothermic. Hypothermia also causes signals to be messed up, and sometimes victims take off their clothes before death, thinking they are burning up.
Yeah.
That being said, all the people who think Mr. Willis had something to do with it is ridiculous. First of all, there were no injuries on any of them. Secondly, how does one guy overpower three large football-type guys? Yeah. Why would he harm his friends? The cops don't think he's involved. I live and was raised here in New York City. I was homeless from 2017 to 2019. Four homeless friends died from hypothermia in that time. The combo of drugs and freezing temperatures is a recipe for death. Just 3 weeks ago in Sarah D. Roosevelt Park, they found a dead man in a sleeping bag that wasn't warm enough. He froze to death.
Yeah.
The park wasn't even crawling with police and investigators. A very normal occurrence in the winter here in New York City. Not even police tape was bothered to be put up. Ugh. So I don't know what he's trying to say there. I guess he's trying to compare a homeless person dying on a park bench to three guys dying in the garden of a friend's house of hypothermia and the level of care and attention that was given to the three men as opposed to the amount of people who die out in the open under our very eyes, under our very noses. But I guess what he's trying to say is that this guy wasn't, well, he was involved to a certain degree because it happened on his property. So
yeah.
Negligence possibly, but not murder.
It doesn't sound like murder, but obviously I don't know all the facts of the case. It just sounds like a really tragic accident. And even if he had potentially seen his friends the following morning, it's probably too late.
Yes, but
to save them. But obviously it's not very nice to know.
But you had to call it in and at least answer the phone. That was a bit of a shit thing. I think the reason why he is now in drug and alcohol rehab is because he fucked up so badly. Like obviously 2 days, you're not responding to anyone or anything, apparently working from home as an HIV scientist, whatever that is. Mm. If he was able to work, then why wasn't he able to answer a few messages?
Well,
and he came out of the bedroom 2 days later with the police there with a glass of wine in his hand in his boxer shorts.
Yeah, look, maybe he is a fuck up. Maybe he's one of these guys who has a very full on online life, doesn't engage with the real world. Maybe he was just super hungover after this big night with the lads. And
well, that's what he says, he was hungover, but other reports say that he was working.
Yeah, so I mean, obviously I don't know what the truth of it is. I think to me it sounds more like an accident than foul play, but
really
yeah. Strange, really awful to think that your dead friends are meters away from you while you're just got your headphones on listening to a fan. It's not very nice.
No, it's not very nice. One thing I will say, Michelle, is try not to stay outside when it's below freezing.
Or if your boyfriend says get outside in your little tiny pair
don't
of shorts.
Don't do it.
Because he's going to make $100 off you. Tell him to fucking go do one.
But you know, people do actually pay a lot of money, Michelle, to go into those cryo chambers or whatever they're called. Apparently that's the latest thing. Go in up to your neck, below freezing for about 5 minutes, come back out and you look great.
Oh, I've seen it treatment.
On Beverly Hills Housewives.
Yeah, okay.
Yes.
There's all those freezing therapies as well.
Cryotherapy.
If you've got gels, it's called Cool Sculpt or something. And
oh, yes.
And they freeze all the fat off and then you come out all svelte with no gels anymore.
Fabulous.
They can do it to fat knees, all sorts of things.
Oh.
Costs a pretty penny, apparently. It's better than death.
She made it awkward. She
made it awkward.
She
how did I make it awkward?
Awkward, awkward.
Awkward.
She made
you.
It awkward. She made awkward, it awkward.
Awkward.
She
outrageous.
Made it awkward. Awkward.
How awkward. We are sticking with the idea of death this week. I've got a question for you.
What's that question, sir? Madam?
I got called sir in Thailand quite a bit. sir. And I was with my sister who they called madam. So they definitely thought I was a sir. I know. Fuck you. Geordie, have you thought about what you want to do with your body after you die?
No. I'm imagining it will just get burnt, cremated, you know, in a nice cardboard coffin or a wicker coffin, whatever you can afford.
Are you an organ donor?
I think I am on my driver's license. I'm not sure. I should be.
I don't know how you even nominate that. I can't even remember if I am. I'm sure you have to, you tick a box at some point somewhere. Well, would you ever consider giving your body to science?
Well, bits of it. If they needed my organs, sure.
Okay. But that, I mean, your organs would go to maybe someone else.
Yeah.
Not to be tested on.
No.
So what, the ones that they didn't want?
No, I don't like that idea. No. I mean, who cares because I'm dead, but meat suit and all that. I'm sure that comes up in your story by the sound of it.
Meat suit? I know. I can't believe you use that term because you fucking hate that term.
I don't like it. Yeah, meat suit.
Meat suit. A suit. A suit of meat.
A suit of meat.
Some lunch meat.
Oh, stop. That's horrible. That sounds like a Lady Gaga outfit.
Oh, my God. Moving along. It's a yes to organ donor, no to body
for
given science. To science.
You know why? I'd hate for my children to go to Body World's exhibition and find that I have been put on a horsey with no skin.
What?
Do you remember that doctor, what's his name? I can't remember his name. That German, apparently, scientist who puts on the Body Worlds exhibition. I've been to it in London. I saw it some many years ago. Body Worlds.
Yeah, I remember it made a stir in the media.
And you've got bodies of homeless people that he has gotten his hands on. And at one room, they're just rolled out flat, like it's a human body that's been rolled out flat. It takes up about 3 or 4 rooms. Then there's all the people that have been stripped of their skin and stuck on a horse that's been stripped of his skin or put in different positions. It just seems disrespectful. I know I paid money to see it, but I regretted it.
Okay.
The chicken that's just made up of its nervous system, though, that was interesting.
But that's because it's a chicken. It's not a human, maybe. You can dissociate. Yeah.
I mean, you can sometimes see the tattoos and stuff on the people. It's just got something about it that didn't sit well with me.
Okay. What about a body farm?
What is it?
Well, I didn't know what a body farm was. Until our gorgeous white witch Safka wrote in to say she is considering donating her body to a body farm.
Okay, well, what does it involve?
Well, I had to dig a little, and it's not what you think, because I initially thought, is a body farm some crazy science lab where maybe your body is somehow used to farm other body parts?
Like grow another ear on a thigh or something?
Yeah, I didn't really know, but it's not Frankensteinish like that. Essentially, a body farm is a forensic crime lab outside in the wild on a farm, hence a body farm. So on a piece of bushland in the Blue Mountains in Australia, owned by the University of Technology in Sydney, also known as UTS, anyone who's not from Australia, who maybe hasn't been to Australia, who doesn't know where the Blue Mountains are, they are located just outside of Sydney. It's absolutely stunning nature. There are the Three Sisters, which are very famous, these pointed rock peaks.
Yep.
In the middle of eucalyptus forests, they give off these oils into the air that give a blue haze to the sky, which is why it's called the Blue Mountains.
Very flammable.
Very fragrant and a beautiful part of Australia. But you do not want to go to this part of the Blue Mountains, because if you do, the chances are that you are going to trip over a dead body.
What? Are they just lying out?
Yes.
What?
They are littered everywhere.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. There's a group of scientists and they just put these corpses that have been donated to the university and they put them out in the wild so they can decompose.
Naturally.
Yes. And the researchers then meticulously study the way the bodies smell, the way they look, the rate at which they decompose, and how the corpses react and decompose in different seasons in the Australian bush.
God.
Because when you can identify, for example, the unique chemical composition of a particular smell that the corpse gives off, this info can be invaluable for forensic investigators and also for police dogs to help find dead bodies in the future.
Okay.
And also to figure out how long they've been there. But of course, to do this kind of research, you need some dead bodies. And that is where a woman called Dr. Shari Forbes comes in, because she is a forensic scientist who is an expert on the decomposition of the human body and also the training of sniffer dogs to detect cadavers. And she's the one who started Australia's first body farm.
Right.
And it's actually called the Australian Facility for Taphonomic Experimental Research, known as AFTER, after. She's doing this for UTS, University of Technology, Sydney. And I didn't know what taphonomy was. And it's basically the science of decomposition, because understanding how the body decomposes can really be the key to solving murders or finding missing people and being able to identify them. And essentially, this is why body farms exist. These body farms are essentially outdoor labs. They observe the state of the decaying bodies, but they also do experiments when they get the cadavers of people who have donated their bodies to AFTER. And they do all sorts of things, Geordie. Mm-hmm. So they might put one body in the scrub under a bush.
Right.
They might put one in a suitcase or bury a body in a shallow grave. They're going to put one in concrete, partially burn one, dismember bodies to see how, if you don't have all your limbs, how fast the body decomposes. Is it faster? Does it take longer?
What a job.
Some of the bodies are naked. Some have clothing. Some have lots of layers of clothing. Some have not so much layers. Some are wrapped in plastic. Some are left in a car. Some get put in a ditch. Some get put half in water. Some are in a tree.
What?
Because some people die in a tree. So you want to see,
like, imagine seeing this if you'd gone on a nice bush walk and you've flown there from Japan or
I know, and you're like, oh, let's go to the Blue Mountains. And then you're
Australia
like,
Australia seems nice.
Ah, what the fuck?
Is this where that backpacker murder took place? I mean, it's going to be bizarre.
I know, really bizarre.
If you come across that. Hopefully there's big, tall fences to keep people out.
Well, it's quite a secret location in the Blue Mountains. Okay. I mean, the Blue Mountains is big.
It's vast.
Yeah, it is. Even some of the bodies, they injure them or they put gunshots in them. So they see how the bullets react. They hang some of them.
Oh, bloody hell, Michelle.
I know. Any combination of this and more. I think
this would have more damage on the psyche than a visit to Gunther von Hagen's Body Worlds exhibition. That's for sure.
If you stumbled across it and did not know where the fuck you were, I think you really would be thinking, I'm in Ivan Milat territory here. Like,
or working there would be very difficult, I think.
Look, I think you would have to mentally disassociate yourself from what you're looking at and the benefits of what you're doing.
Not just, looking at, but having to shoot a corpse, hang a corpse, chop up a corpse.
Wrap it in plastic.
The thing is, they're used to certain conditions as, what are they called again?
What?
What's the word? I've forgotten the
cadaver.
Word. Cadaver. No, the people who work on those bodies, Nickies and the
whatnot. Oh, what, the forensic scientists?
As a forensic scientist, they have to do these kind of things. They have to work on bodies. They pull them apart. They look at the organs from a scientific point of view. But pulling out an AK-47 and riddling a body with holes or stringing one up in a tree, it's a bit different to what they were taught at university or at forensic school.
But I think that's probably tempered by the fact that it is really important work and it's crucial for training, for training dogs to sniff out dead bodies. It's important for forensic scientists. And I think it's also really important work in terms of understanding how bodies react in different temperatures and conditions. I think it also can help scientists figure out how the body changes, because they've found that fingerprints change after decomposition. And also they have discovered that you can recover DNA at different levels of decomposition before the point of no return where there is no DNA.
Okay.
So I think it's kind of grisly, but I also think it's really, really fascinating. And I actually did read an article about how UK scientists in the last few years have been lobbying for a body farm in the UK.
Oh, God.
Yeah, there's a woman called Dr. Anna Williams from the University of Huddersfield. Because, I mean, you're going to have to do it somewhere like in the middle of nowhere to have a body farm in the UK. She's making a case for why she believes a UK body farm is really, really needed. And this is a quote from her. She says, "We know that the sequence of events in decomposition proceeds along the same path regardless of where the body is. But the timing is very different depending on many factors. Moisture, temperature, insects, they're the most important things." And when you think about that, well, a body in the UK is going to decompose massively differently to a body in Australia.
Absolutely. And the dogs need training over here as well.
Yeah, of course, because,
they're not going to ship a dog across from Australia to the UK to go and sniff out bodies because they've been trained there. Yeah.
And, you've got a body in Australia out in the baking heat for weeks or months or years, and the insects that get into that body are going to be different. The wildlife that are going to munch on that body is different. You know, you've got different weather patterns. So I can see how information from a body farm in Australia is useful to a point, but you kind of need one in your own country if you want a more accurate and useful take on how bodies decompose. Currently, all decomposition experiments in the UK are done on animals, mainly pigs. So when you think about that, the results are not going to be great because no one knows if the rate of decomposition of a pig is the same as for humans. So
for sure.
So that puts a massive question mark over whether or not they're a good substitute.
Yeah.
So I think if you want to know how a human body decomposes, you got to put a human body out there and to get the right results.
I guess.
And apparently a lot of medical examiners use insect colonization on the body and inside the body to try and work out when someone died. But it's really not easy to accurately pinpoint that because weather conditions change, not even like between Australia and the UK, but from place to place. You know, you think about up north in the UK compared to, you know, the warmer areas or coastal regions, like, you know, the bacteria, the insects, it's all super different. So apparently also things like whether or not a person was obese or if they were on antibiotics, if they were diabetic, if they were vegetarian.
It makes a difference to how they decompose.
Yeah.
That's interesting, isn't it?
It all comes into play. It does in some ways. When you think about all of these variables, it feels like a stab in the dark. But there was some new information a few years back from the world's first body farm in Tennessee that analyzed bacteria scraped from the nose and ear canals of decomposing cadavers, which then led scientists to discover that there is potentially a succession of bacteria that come and go on the body and feed on the decaying body. And there is a particular order. So if you know the order of this bacteria and how it happens, it then can help scientists to more accurately pinpoint the time of death because of the, they call it a necrobiome, the variety of organisms that feed on a corpse. So we now know that they feed in a predictable pattern. And then this really is useful for helping scientists decide, you know, when a less recent death occurred, because you look at these patterns. Investigators can also figure out when someone died, and this is actually called post-mortem interval, by analyzing the gases being emitted by the body. Because the concentration of these different gases does change predictably over time. So if you understand the type of gas coming from the body, you can more easily figure out when someone died. It's really, really useful to have these body farms. And apparently there are 9 of them around the world. The first body farm was pioneered by a guy called Bill Bass at the University of Tennessee in 1971. He was an anthropologist. This is a quote from Bill. He says, "I hate death. I've lost 2 wives to cancer. I just don't like that scene at all, funerals and burials. But I never see a forensic case as a dead body. I see it as a challenge to find out if I have enough knowledge to uncover who that individual is and what happened to them."
Right.
And this is partly why he started the world's first body farm, because he wanted to find out, are there patterns in human decomposition that can help solve crimes and give peace to loved ones?
Well, it does make sense, doesn't it? Like, you know, what you've just said, if they're vegetarian, if they're this, that or the other, that gives them an extra layer of help rather than having to rely on DNA tracing and familial matches and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I say, good on you. Continue with the great work. Please don't let me have to see it or be anywhere near it.
Well, and I guess you're not going to put your hand up and give your body over to this.
No. I know that I'll be dead, but I still kind of don't like the idea of my poor little corpse being dragged hither and thither and thrown around and pulled apart and dressed up and thrown in the water and bloated and
Well, I was talking to Andreas about this and I said, would you do it? And he said, what, and leave my family to have a funeral with no body?
Yeah, there is that.
And he said, no, I couldn't do it to them. And I hadn't even thought about that because you have to have a funeral where there is no burial. There's no cremation. You know, there's no nothing. It's just a ceremony. And then the body is gone.
Yeah.
I don't know if at the end of the experiment they would return. I think I did read that they cremate the bodies at the end of these experiments. Yeah. And maybe you can give the ashes back to the family. But if you're doing a 10-year study on a body, that's a long time to wait. I tell you what, though, there was a very interesting thing I read about the Australian Body Farm. So in 2019, there was an undergraduate researcher called Alison Wilson. She was doing this study using time-lapse photography. She found the body actually moves when it's a corpse. Yep.
We've talked about this before, haven't we?
Have we?
I feel like we have when we've done deep dives into death and what happens to your body after death.
Well, she used a time-lapse camera to film the decomposition of a donor body in 30-minute intervals over 17 mm-hmm. months.
No.
What she saw was the arms move. And not just by a centimeter. We're talking the arms started off down the side of the body and they ended up
You have told me this before.
Really?
Oh my God.
I have to find out where this is. It freaked everybody out when they saw this time lapse.
Sure.
Yeah. They thought initially, oh, is it just the ligaments drying out? But no, they kind of go out to the side and then it comes back into the body. Starts from down the side of your leg, goes straight out, and then comes back.
My God.
I know. It's wild.
That distresses me.
What does it matter if you're dead? You're a meat suit.
Well, it doesn't matter, but why is it happening? That's what I want to know. Why? Neil the scientist, please get in touch.
Maybe Neil has some info on this. Who knows? But last year they also found at this UTS body farm that human remains in Sydney and local surrounds, instead of decomposing, the body's mummified.
Oh.
And it didn't matter if it was summer or winter, the body continued to mummify even up to 3 years later.
Wow.
Yeah. This is important because before this finding, experts would have said that mummification of a body could only happen in cold months and that in summer it would decompose.
Yeah.
Now they know that if you see the mummification of a body, before it would have been assumed that that body would have been dumped in autumn or winter. Now they know it could be any time of the year. So the findings of this stuff is really interesting. But I did read an article where there was a 75-year-old Australian woman called Carol Cruikshank, and she decided she was going to donate her body to UTS, to the body farm. She's diabetic. She says she's a bit overweight. And after thinking about what would be most useful to society, she decided she didn't want to be an organ donor anymore. She was going to donate her body to AFTER. So she says she replaced the organ donor card in her wallet with a new one that is a body donation card that says, I confirm that this is my wish after my death, obviously, not before.
Please.
To have my remains made available to the Faculty of Science at the University of Technology, Sydney. Now, interestingly, Carol also says her decision was kind of a protest against the funeral industry because she thinks the whole thing is a rot. She says, you're dead, but basically they're still making money off you. Look, of course there are the necessary things you need to do to take care of a body after death, but she says after her father and one of her brothers died, she was shocked by the cost of the funerals and the size of the industry. And that she says, once you're dead, your body is a carcass and there's just too much hoo-ha around funerals. So she's pretty happy with her decision to give her body to a body farm. She's really curious about how her body is going to react to whatever scenario they put her in.
Shame she'll never know.
Well, she'll never know, but the family might. And she's also curious because she's got two knee replacements. And she's like, are they just going to end up being lumps of metal sitting on bones? Yeah,
probably.
Yeah. Because, you know, the soft tissue is the first part of the body that decomposes. Then you've got hard tissue like teeth and bones, which takes a long time to degrade. And implants don't degrade at all. Most of these implants have a serial number on them, which is a game changer in tricky cases. So if this sounds like something you would want to do, have I changed your mind, Geordie?
No.
No.
Sorry. But good on you to Carol and Safka for wanting to do such a noble thing with their carcass, their body, whatever you'd like to call it, after death.
Well, the thing is,
to aid future generations and crime stopping or crime solving.
Exactly. But it's not guaranteed that you're going to get accepted as a specimen for the body farm. People have been rejected.
You could be rejected. Interesting.
Now, one woman was rejected because she had lived in England but was in Australia.
Yeah.
She lived in England until 1982, which made her a risk for Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease. Mad cow.
What we talked about recently.
Exactly. Yeah. It's caused by an agent called a prion. And the risk associated with prion disease was too high for them to take her body. So she was rejected. If you've got the plague, diphtheria, anthrax or smallpox, you are also going to be rejected.
From the Australian study, at
from
least.
The Australian
because obviously
study,
they are hot on their quarantining. Mm-hmm. Whereas in England, I mean, that wouldn't be a problem.
Yep. Also, if you've undergone whole organ donation, if you're obese or emaciated, you might also get rejected. I don't really know the reasons because obviously even anorexic people get murdered. I don't really know. And obese people get murdered. So I don't know why. But if you are listening to this podcast and you think it is something you might want to do, here are a couple of top tips for you.
Okay.
So only you and no one else, not even your next of kin, can consent to your body being donated to science.
That sounds fair.
I think that you can be an organ donor, but I also think after you die, potentially your family can be lobbied.
They can say,
yes. That's not the case with this. It all has to be arranged in advance because, like I said, you might get rejected. You might also have to jump through a few hoops when you're alive, including you have to sign on the dotted line that you want to give your body to a body farm or have it used for science. And the consent form needs to be kept with your will and your doctor, and you need to tell your friends and family about it so they all know your wishes.
All right.
Also, second point, you don't get paid for this, and neither does your family. So it is purely a donation. You donate your family. Yeah, but I mean, if you were thinking, oh, maybe if I give my body to science and my family get, you know, $10,000 for it, it might help them out. Well, no, there's no money that changes hands here.
You'll save money. There's no funeral.
Exactly. And this is my third point, actually, that you can have a memorial service or celebration of life service, but you won't have a typical funeral. Like I said earlier, the body farm will most likely cremate your body once they're done with it.
Yeah.
That's what I've got for you on the body farms.
Amazing.
A little deep dive. I think it's interesting and I do think it is important work. I'm not sure that I would want my body wrapped in plastic and stuck in a suitcase, but also what the fuck do I care if I'm dead? You know, I don't know. It's not like my family need closure on my death, and maybe my active donation could help a future family.
Yeah,
you know,
that.
Bring peace to them in terms of identification, time of death, whatever. But yeah.
But to be fair, Michelle, it sounds like they're not short of donations if it's littered, as you called it earlier, in the Blue Mountains with bodies.
Yeah. Look, I mean, I think that they do get, I think it's something like 10 inquiries a week about, this is at UTS.
Well, that will keep them going.
But not all of them go through with it and not all of them are suitable.
Sure.
And then they have to wait for them to die.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you could say in your 30s, I want to give my body to a body farm. You don't die till you're 90. You know, I'm not sure they have like a steady supply, but it's just something that I think it's just another thing to consider along with organ donation. If you don't care about what happens.
Yeah, sure.
I was going to say, you don't care. You do care about what happens to your body, but you think that this could be useful.
Thank you. Thank you, Michelle. And thank you,
Safka,
for sending it in. Absolutely. That's intriguing. Well, Michelle, speaking of death and endings, it feels like we have come to the end of this particular podcast, actually.
It does.
So I think it might be time for you to say the usual thing that you say every week and I agree with, which is,
wherever you are,
whatever you do,
just keep
eavesdropping.
Eavesdropping.